Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. Opportunity zones, what are they? They're kind of new. The concept isn't necessarily new, but they have a whole lot of complexity, rules, and things that most people don't even know exist. These are not just about real estate people. They offer some great opportunities. Now, speaking of great opportunities, today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Lending Standard, the only secure online origination and underwriting platform solution for HUD, Fannie, Freddie, and bank multifamily lenders. Visit lendingstandard.com to learn more or click the link in the show notes. Now, in order for me to have a conversation that helps your business grow, I got to have a conversation with someone. With me today, I've got Leonard Mills. Leonard is the CEO of the Verte Opportunity Fund. You can learn more about what they do by going to verteoz.com. That's V-E-R-T-E-O-Z.com. There's a link in the show notes, which will make it even easier for you to visit them. And Lending Standard, straight out of College Park, Maryland. Leonard, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Thank you, Matt. So great to be here.
Yeah, well, I'd like to, before we get this conversation started, you know, I like to say no one tells the backstory better than CEOs and founders. So give me a brief history of Leonard Mills and Verte. And that sounds like a great place to get started.
Yeah. Okay, great. So I'm a trained economist by training, and that's many moons ago. However, I've been involved in early in my career in public policy. And then I got involved in investment management. Mostly in fixed income and real estate portfolios on the institutional side. Fast forward a couple decades there, and then I ended up doing starting out on my own and doing a – so I'm used to startup companies and entrepreneurial trials and tribulations there, so hopefully that resonates with your audience. But I started out on my own. I created a investment advisory company of my own, and our first sort of large effort was around a venture capital fund, which I had never done before. This was in 2015, and we had some success with that fund. I found it very interesting to be dealing with young emerging companies. And then when the Opportunity Zone legislation passed in 2017, and then fast forward a couple years by the time they got the regulations in place to 2019, I said, you know what? The other fund had closed to new investors. However, we decided that this is really interesting. I found a pretty compelling public policy, reaching back in my time, that this is a great tax policy and designed to bring capital, financial capital, and I would argue human capital, into areas that have traditionally not, you know, had those funding opportunities. So we started the fund 2019, fast forward a little bit with COVID there in early 2020, which kind of slowed everything down. But we're up and running. We have about 10 companies currently in the portfolio. They range from all kinds of different industries, all kinds of different locations. So we're not bound geography-wise or industry-wise. And we invest in early stage companies that we think will have high growth potential. And we're invested for the long term. By the nature of the program, it's a long-term investment horizon. And therefore, we view ourselves as partners with our companies that we're investing in. And we're in for the long haul to generate growth and help those companies and then help our investors. So it's marrying those two interests.
So according to the IRS, an opportunity zone is defined as an economic development tool that allows people to invest in distressed areas in the United States. The purpose is to spur economic growth and job creation in low-income communities while providing tax benefits to investors. Now, okay, so what exactly does that mean, Leonard?
Yes, very good. Well, the I'll come from the tax side first, even though that's you started at the beginning there, which is really the fundamental policy side. The tax side is for the investor, if they take their capital gains, that they may have achieved from, you know, really anything. Anything's eligible. There's no restrictions on where the capital gains come from. You would normally pay taxes on those capital gains as part of your normal tax filings. What the program allows is you to defer and reduce and ultimately, which is where we play the most, eliminate capital gains. So if you put your money in after 180 days, there's some restrictions there, after 180 days or before 180 days, you can defer your taxes now up to 5 years. You can reduce those taxes on those realized capital gains by 10%. And importantly, if you hold on to your new investment that you put into the Opportunity Zone Fund, if you hold on to that investment for 10 years, any capital gains that you realize on the new investment is literally tax-free. So if you think about, you know, getting a 10X on your money over 10 years, which is possible in an early stage company, that 10X is pretty much all capital gains. And the federal government will take, depending on the tax legislation at that time, you know, anywhere from, you know, 24%, 25%, could go as high as 30%, and you know who knows what in the future. But it doesn't really matter what it is in the future because there are no capital gains taxes on that 10-year investment. That's on the investor side. And as alluded to in the legislation that you just read, the purpose of that is to bring long-term capital into those areas. So there's certain geographically designated areas. There's 8,700 census tracts across the U.S. Every state has them. Every, you know, they're quite widespread. They're all over the place, and including some U.S. territories. So there's a number of these opportunity zones, and the idea is to bring that capital into those areas, that financial capital, for a long-term capital commitment. We share that, but we also try to bring, as I mentioned earlier, a partnership to the companies. So we not only view ourselves as capital partners, but business partners. We help them in their business development to the extent we can and have expertise. And we help them with you know, finding other synergies with, across whatever industry they're in. So those are the other things we look for.
So I first became familiar with opportunity zones when they came out, largely because many of the people, I don't know if I really hang out with people that aren't entrepreneurs or maybe capitalists. Just for the nature of my business and who I do business with, it's usually CEOs and founders and a lot of different stuff, but also became aware of opportunity zones because I needed to move my office at Full Scale. And I believe you and I have had a prior conversation about this outside of the show. So not knowing what an opportunity zone was, I went and I started diving into it and I started looking, and you know, lo and behold, years later, we are about to take occupancy in our new office in downtown Kansas City, Kansas.
There
now,
you go.
For those of you listening, I'm in Kansas City. That's where all the hosts, all the full-time hosts for Startup Hustle exist. But most people don't know this. Kansas City is mainly in Missouri. So Kansas City, as you know it as a downtown, is in Missouri, not Kansas. But there is a little tiny tract of it. Now, that said, 80 years ago, 50 years ago, it was a bustling, vibrant part of town. And then for whatever reason, I mean, that's a whole nother topic, it turned to shit. And it's just like vacant buildings, the businesses were gone, and it was distressed. And so overall, and I'm going to, this is my attempt to kind of simplify this for the non-economists here. No one wants to invest money in communities like that because the real estate isn't hot. And it means that you can get stuck with it for a lot of time and for a long time. And a lot of time it requires not only the purchase of it, but significant investment just to make it work usable. I mean, literally like habitable. So in order to incentivize businesses to, or investors or whatever, they have to come up with something, you know, and that's, and you know, that's where this came from. But one of the things that I found the most interesting that, and I never hear people talk about this because everyone that I talk to about opportunity zones is all about the real estate. You can invest in businesses that are in the OZ too and experience the exact same benefits as long as the substantial portion of said business's operations occur within the, I mean, like they're housed there, they, you know, like they're in the opportunities. And listen, people, there are 8,700 opportunity zones. And these aren't, sometimes are big swaths of big patches of geography. So from the perspective of a startup, if you can get your business in there, like you, you have actually opened up the possibility of taking in funding and money from a whole nother segment of capital. And if you're there, cause like Leonard said, they, this is intended to be a long play. If you're there for 10 years now, most people are like, you know, the, that business exited after 3 years. No, it didn't. It was probably like 8 to 10. Like every decent exit that occurs isn't after 3 years. It usually isn't. It's usually further down the line. In that particular situation, also, as Leonard mentioned, say you have $100 million exit. It's a huge tax liability. So if you have the foresight to set these things up, take in the money, work with the right people, maybe even buy the building that you're in or something. Okay. I mean, that's a neat thing, in my opinion. Now, I don't qualify. My business doesn't qualify for that because most of my employees are in the Philippines. But that's okay. We still wanted to go down. We just moved into a like a 17,000 square foot building. And and by the way, that building had been purchased by the people we're working with 7 years ago. They put $1 million into renovating it, and then it sat vacant for 6 years. So that tells you like how tricky this stuff could be. That's a very illiquid asset because no one wants to buy that building. Or at least at a loss. So, you know, anyway, there's a lot of neat stuff going on now in regards to, so we have real estate, we have businesses. What else is under that legislation or that you found that could possibly be covered? Is any of that related to equipment or anything else? I'm not really sure.
So really, so the real estate's very easy to define. It's fundamentally location-based incentive. So you got to be located somewhere. And the reason the real estate have particularly latched onto it is they're used to location-based incentives. And so that as an asset class was initially the where everyone landed. However, I'm going to speak specifically at the beginning here to startup businesses, early stage companies, and typical a typical profile is probably one of you didn't qualify because of the extra dimensions you had there with both real estate and the business. But as a general rule, what ends up happening is a startup company, I'll just pick on that. A startup company typically leases their property. They have, at the beginning, a few employees, so it's 5, 10, whatever number. They lease that property. They may have some equipment, computers, maybe some light manufacturing equipment, or what, or whatever the case may be. And as long as you put it, a substantial portion, and not 100%, but a substantial portion of those employees and found, and that would include the founders, and their equipment are located there, or their headquarters are there. And again, these are small companies, so typically they only have one, they may only have one location, but they can have multiple locations. As long as they're in the opportunity zones, they qualify. And the way we think about a small business is they won't be small. Our hope and their hope is they won't be small forever. They want to grow. And I'm going to come back to your point about the 8-year horizon or something. They may go through several expansion periods during that, where they're needing new financing, they're hiring another 50 people. And, you know, this would be the great story in that neighborhood, in that opportunity zone. Suddenly it started out at 5, and then it's 10, and then it's 20, and then it's 50. And now it's suddenly a real business, a substantial business. And that's the hope. That's the long-term goal there, both for the founders and the tax legislation. So it's a perfect mesh of incentives there. And, you know, they may have to figure out a different location. There may be some complication, and there's some rules, but I always encourage the businesses, don't view it as a lot of rules, because it is doable, and they may not know about it, but it's imminently doable. We've done it. Other people have done it. And it's not just about real estate. It is about businesses. So, you know, we don't want to get into the weeds here, I don't think, on all the rules. They're not that complicated. Don't be scared by them. You can fit them on one page of paper. So
yeah, I got through it in while eating lunch in front of my computer, like in an afternoon. I was going to meet with someone about it, and I was like, I should maybe know something about this first. Exactly. And so, I think I went through, and it was pretty straightforward. Now, that was also 3 or 4 years ago. I don't know how much of that's changed.
It hasn't changed. It's the same rules, and people are doing it. And again, if that scenario that I painted there, it worked. It brought, you know, it may take 8 years to get there, or, you know, two funds.
You never know. You never know. Yeah.
And give it a chance.
So Leonard, someone out there is thinking they're going to DeCourcy. You moved your business to an opportunity zone. You don't own the building, and you don't get the benefit of the business side of it. Why are you even doing it? Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, it was cheap.
Yeah.
I'm in a space that's freshly renovated. Like, I mean, it's all done, and it's at 25% of the cost of being 5 minutes away,
right,
in downtown Kansas City. Also, my family, I come from a family of entrepreneurs, and they first did business in Kansas City, Kansas in 1903. Yeah. And I feel a social responsibility that my business leave a positive impact somewhere, somehow. And look, I'll tell you, Leonard, it takes me 30 minutes to drive there. I could have very easily gotten a space right around the corner from my house.
Yeah.
But that was impact free, man.
It may have been more expensive, as you pointed out too. Yeah. So
it would have been a lot more expensive. It would have been a lot more convenient, and I could have justified it either way. But we actually reached out. We did meetings with the mayor, the city manager. We worked with the company that owns the building to partner up. I'm proud to say that it's not just me from Startup Hustle, but Andrew Morgans, our host on Tuesdays for Amazon and e-commerce, has moved his business in to the main floor of the building. And now all of a sudden we have a little spark in the downtown area. And that's and that's that exactly.
Spark. Yeah. That little spark will turn into a fire.
Hopefully. And you know what? It will or it won't. Now, look, I'm not a social crusader. I support so many people that are, but I got my hands full with my business and my family right now, and I'm just trying to hang on to that. So this is my way of doing that. Now, here's the thing. Because this is an opportunity zone, it's also not trafficked. Like, I park right in front of my building and walk right in. It's our own structure. It's our own building. It's a lot of fun. Opportunity zones come in a lot of shapes and flavors. Some of them may literally like be the shell of a building.
Yeah.
Like maybe even half of a shell of the building in a neighborhood where you just might not ever want to go for many reasons. And then some of them, this was downtown Kansas City. I'm literally right around the corner from a casino, a courthouse, and this city building. I can see them all right out of the building. And it's it's not a terrible spot. It's just that every other building is vacant. Now that changes. So now all of a sudden we've got 30 people working in this building. These 30 people, they're going to eat lunch every day. They're going to buy shit at the convenience store that's a few doors down. There's a taco restaurant on the corner. We're going to hopefully not lose all of our paychecks at the casino. If we, you know, we're going to get parking tickets for violating the 2-hour meter rule. And now, but hey, isn't that stimulating a local economy?
Absolutely. All those things that you mentioned, and your story is actually very typical that, it's not, they wanted to be there for one reason or another. They want to be there. They are going to have an impact. They're going to, again, hopefully grow. And that's our intention. Certainly their intention. Those 30 people will suddenly turn into, or over time will turn into 50 people, or then 60.
And then turns into that building across the street and the one next to it.
You get all the spillover.
Yeah.
One thing leads to another. The taco stand opens, and then some other restaurant opens. The other thing we've seen, and it's not just the building, your building itself or the services around it. You know, there can be people that are moving into those, multifamily dwellings that might be cropping up nearby because they want to be, the workers, people that work there want to be close by too. So it starts as a spark, as you put it. And we've seen it in real life. There's one of the companies we invested in Baltimore. You know, it's a beautiful building built in the early 1900s, a lithograph building, actually the pride of that part of Baltimore. They did the National Geographic magazines, the lithograph, and then they went out of business. The company went out of business, beautiful building. The building went vacant for 40 years.
And then it falls apart.
Trees were growing in it.
And then the roof leaks, and then something else happens.
And the neighborhood. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the real estate developer, we didn't get involved in the real estate developer. The real estate developer said, this is a great location. It's, you know, this beautiful facade. Let's do something with it. They did. And then one of our companies moved in there. And they are hiring, they're sort of in the graphic arts animation business. They hired a bunch of young artists to work there. Started with 10, and now it's up to 50 just a year later. And what's happened is really cool to see. And the company's one of our success stories. But suddenly those people say, you know what? I see those row houses across the street that were dilapidated also. And they say, are they up for rent? Can I rent there? Because it's literally in the same block and they want to live there. And the landlord said, sure. Can you fix it up? And blah, blah, blah. And suddenly now they're fixing up the sidewalks, the streets, the facades of the buildings. They've got, you know, so it really made a difference in that block. Now that block will lead to another block and so on and so forth. So that's the hope. Going back to the public policy side, which, I cut my teeth on, but then got into the investment business. I've seen this work and this policy, I'm a big fan of it. I think the investors, the financial incentives for the investors are quite substantial. If you look at
they need to be though, because like keep in mind this is not attractive real estate in most cases. Not. And real estate's a real finicky thing. And then all of a sudden then we put a pandemic in the middle of all this, which and what all I read on the Wall Street Journal and my news feed is, you know, this place is gonna work remote till the year 4087, and it's cutting, you know, and it's cutting down on the need for a lot of that, and it put a lot of pressure on it. It's actually what slowed me down. Now, one of the things, you know, we're sitting here talking about about opportunity zone investment. So there's a key ingredient that I learned. That you talk about that spark that turns into a little kindling fire that is now like big. Well, something has to provide that spark.
Yeah.
And there's a few ways. So if you're an investor, so the investor that owned that building has basically incentivized my business through really, really affordable space.
Yep.
Right. And because we were doing that, was able to talk to the city, was able to talk to whatever. So why did we get such a great deal? It's because we were willing to be first.
Yep.
We were willing to be first. Now, in some cases that it could be a draw, and sometimes it isn't because of the stuff that we do. We're one of the fastest growing companies in Kansas City. We have employees that have a higher wage. That's a big thing. But whether you're investing or you're looking for a space, so if you're looking for a space, put the feelers out there. Who has some opportunity zone real estate that they want to, you know, like we're willing to explore the possibility. And if you're an investor, go find someone that, okay, so we create hype with this podcast. Like now we're recording this remote. That won't always be the case. We're looking forward to having people come sit down for an experience. Now, look, that's meaningful though, because those people come and they come and see an area. Now, when I was getting ready to go down working on this a couple of years ago, and we were talking, I would tell people I know, they'd say, well, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm on my way down to Kansas City, downtown KCK. They say, oh, are you investigating a murder? Like I actually had someone say that to me, you know, or like, just like, are you worried you're going to get killed? No, I'm not. And I never was. Yeah. And it's not like that down there. But the thing is these places become stigmatized. And so if you have anything that creates traffic or any kind of draw or your ability to, so I have the ability to showcase that space and talk about it and do a lot of stuff because we've built a pretty big audience here at Startup Hustle. We do a lot of other things as well. So look for the things that you do that can create attention and validation or even just like credibility. Like people really do keep asking me, they're like, are you worried? Okay, first off, literally the police headquarters is six doors down.
Yeah.
And not the jail, like where all the cops go to work, like administrative, and they all park in a parking garage that is right behind my building. I am not worried about security. Another thing too is for people to commit crime, there actually have to be people around. And in a lot of these areas, there's just not that many people occupying the spaces. Now, maybe that changes, but you know, I haven't had any issues with that. And, you know, and now we'll see changes. But
well, I mean, you are first and many of these things are.
We're technically not first because there's other businesses that are down there. We're the first business of our kind.
Yeah.
Like they wanted some tech businesses. Everyone's fascinated with tech and startups and whatever. Yeah. The businesses that are down there are because the courthouse is close. There's like a big office building next to us that's pretty much full of lawyers.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, so, and it's a lot of the businesses that are around there, like the Chamber of Commerce is right across the street. And you know, the police station, they're in a whole lot past it. There's a bank. Now past that, three or four blocks up the street, Kansas University just redid an 80,000 square foot building and put a medical center in. And that was the real spark, but that's a little further down the road. So that's like at the other end of the OZ and we're at the other end past that. But
you're hitting on a few points there. One is there's usually some reason in these areas, there's some institutions that aren't going anywhere. There's the Kansas hospital that you mentioned. There's
or the city building.
Or the city buildings. They're not going anywhere. So there's a foundation there to begin with. And that's a very typical situation in these there's people that will be there and are interested in that area. And then if you breathe just a little spark into that, it is newsworthy. We've experienced that too. Yep. It is newsworthy, and you will get publicity for your company, for what you're doing, for investors. People will, I'm getting on my soapbox here because I think it's a great program. And I think there's really something that people should look into because it happens. And again, yours is a story.
That's part of why we talk to the city. That's why we talk to the city because I just refer to it as creating hype, you know.
I'm sure they did.
They did. And then the thing is, now there's some complexity to that. There is.
Yeah.
That is almost literally a different episode because not everyone's happy you're moving in.
Oh, really? Interesting. What's
like,
that
about? That can happen. I mean, just meaning like there's just questions, you know, like questions and just like, you know, what does this mean? Is it going to gentrify the neighborhood? Like, is your plan to embrace local businesses? Because here's the thing. I mentioned I live 30 minutes away because people that live in a lot of these communities, they're just hesitant because they've heard it all before.
Yep.
So some of it's kind of like, what are your intentions? What do you want to do? Yep. Like, I mean, for me, I'm just trying to have a place to work.
Yeah.
Now it makes a lot of sense for me, even though it's 30 minutes away from my house. One of the main things, and so we didn't have to do this, but this year, but we keep a suite at the local arena and we host 70 to 80 events at concerts and events we call them suite and greet. And we have 16 entrepreneurs, investors, or influencers all come with a plus one and enjoy a show and kind of have a good time. Now, here's the thing. That's 6 minutes away from the new office. So that's like, that made a lot of sense for us and a lot of other stuff. But yeah, it's also, and now that said, it's also been a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, when it came to return on effort, I probably should have gotten the place that was right around the corner. But I think that's still TBD in many regards because, like I said, some of it's, it's if you can do something positive in and around a community, a lot of these spaces are really cool too. They're a little different. Like,
you gotta have some imagination.
Well, when you mentioned like the creative company, like there are certain types of businesses that just have the attitude and vibe that thrive with like some of these spaces that are, you know, redone. And like, that's Marknology, that's Andrew Morgan's business.
Yeah.
They're all creatives. They do all this kind of crazy marketing stuff and help people sell stuff on Amazon. And like, they loved the space.
Yeah.
They loved it. They were like, this is freaking awesome. Another thing too, is there's like an old coffee shop in the front of it. That's like our community space. So it immediately had some vibe to it and whatever, but it's all, but here's the thing is if you're trying to invest in these things, I mean, you can find, I guarantee you can find a lot of early stage businesses that are looking for cool, affordable space.
Yes.
With that, the word affordable though is iffy because here's a couple things I want to talk to those looking to invest in. So these are some pitfalls we ran into. Okay. So the building we went into had literally not had a quote real tenant in it since the internet came out. Which means there wasn't existing infrastructure to provide modern internet to the building. Now, that might not sound like a big deal, but it is. Because when we got there and we went to hook it up, we called in like AT&T and all those, you know, kind of providers. They're like, it's $70,000 to run the line to your building.
Yeah.
And you're like, excuse me? You know, so, you know, some of that. Now, fortunately, Kansas City, Kansas had run a fiber line through parts of the town and we had to tap into that. And we got a little bit of help from the city on that.
Yeah.
Cause all of a sudden I was like, to hook up the internet will be what I'm going to pay in rent for like 2 full years, you know? So some of that is like, you ran into a lot of issues. These old buildings have problems.
Yeah.
We've had to fix the roof a couple times.
Yeah.
You know, and just like goofy stuff, just goofy, weird stuff that does kind of pile on expense wise. And I don't think it's predictable either. I don't think you can predict. Well, some of it you can, I'm sure, if you knew what you're doing. But if you don't know what you're doing, there's a wolf in sheep's clothing waiting for you on the other side of that door. Have you run into any stuff like that?
Yeah. I mean, that does happen. These are old, and oftentimes, especially in the urban areas, older infrastructure, that's common. You do have to kind of, at least, you may not be able to predict it, but you should be able to foresee some problems or expect some problems. I think that is good advice for people. And that's going to happen. And there's no way, you know, it's going to happen. I can't tell you what it is in each building. But I think, you know, you should prepare for that. But that, again, you know, how that meshes out in terms of your return on investment or return on effort, you know, is, I would say, to be determined. I don't think, as a matter of course, it's going to necessarily worsen either one. You talked about your return on effort. If you consider your effort, broadly speaking, a little more broadly speaking, and again, the Opportunity Zone investors will have this attitude, a little more broadly speaking, it's worth it. Because you not only, there's these spillover effects, and it's not just yourself, it's the whole concept of what's going on. Now, that requires a lot. That's a big burden to shoulder there.
But if you're playing with house money, it doesn't matter, because that's what you're doing in this case. Like, you're going to pay this money to the IRS anyway. So if you roll it over into something, at least you've got a shot.
The government wants you to spend it. That's fundamentally what they want you to do. They want you to have to go, the investors and you, to go a little extra mile, not completely, but go a little extra mile and say, okay, I got to fix the internet infrastructure in your example.
That's what I said to the mayor of Kansas City, Kansas. I said, you guys want me to try to get people to move down here, but I can't do that if you don't have the modern things that modern businesses need.
And the mayor will help you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it could be that mayor. It could be the next mayor. Yeah. It doesn't matter. What we found is,
well, sometimes the internet service providers, like some of them, like, so we didn't just call one, we called three, and then we pitted them against each other. Now, here's the thing: they want the business. If they think all of a sudden they're going to have a bunch of new subscribers in there,
exactly, they're thinking ahead too. They're not just thinking about you. They're thinking, well, wait a minute, if I get this whole building, and this thing does become a spark.
Those are sticky contracts. They stick around for a while.
Exactly right. So they're thinking about it too. So those are, again, the institutional collaborators that you're going to, those people aren't going anywhere. They want to stay there. They want to be in that building, and they're going to help you to the extent they can. It makes sense for them. And they're going to be long range thinkers as well. But, you know, you got to get started. And somebody has to sort of start it. And then it does. I've seen that. It builds. Like, I'll pick the Baltimore example again. The city said, you know what, we got to fix. They saw the building and they said, you know what, we got to fix the streets around the building.
Yep.
And they did that on their initiative, because they suddenly saw cars there. It's the same story.
Oh, yeah.
They saw cars there and the people driving the cars. It's a pothole. Can you fix it? Yes. And they paved the whole street. So
that's you have to live in Kansas City to understand the hot subject that has been over the last few years. So anyway, it's no secret that multifamily loan process can be difficult to manage. That's why multifamilydebt.com's intuitive online platform can help take the pain out of the process by matching borrowers with lenders vying for their business, streamlining the application process, and providing guidance from industry experts to help borrowers find the best option. Multifamilydebt.com, that is a lending standard .com product and a marketplace that makes it easy and efficient to get loans for multifamily properties, many of which exist in opportunity zones. So my question is, are people having a reasonable time and a good time? Are they successfully getting funding and loans to buy these properties, or is it an entire dog and pony show to get them done?
No, there's you know, I don't know what the latest count is, but it's been one of the more successful. It's gotten mixed press, I would say, but it's been one of the more successful programs. Hundreds of billions of dollars. A lot of it's in the shadows. Like, it's not actually in the public, because there's a lot of people that do their own fund for their own investment. It could be a local real estate developer, and they don't really advertise. They do have to report to the IRS, but there's no one tracking that stuff, that kind of activity. Now,
yeah,
the OZ fundamentally is an equity investment. It is not a loan. So if you're looking for loans, that's a different program. This requires the investor to make an equity investment. And going back to the Spark analogy, you need that equity at the beginning. You need someone to step up and take some risk. The people that are making the loans don't take as much risk, right? They get their money back. At least they're first in line to get their money back. But it's the people that have the equity and get the higher returns because they're willing to stick their neck out a little bit more than a loan. So the program is designed around equity investments, not debt investments. So.
Okay. So, well, that explains that. In regards to, so, you know, one of the things we like to talk about here on Startup Hustle isn't always when things go well. It's sometimes when things don't go well.
Yeah.
Can you either share a story or a firsthand point of view, or heed a little caution for some things that could, or that you've seen kind of implode on people?
Yeah. Well, some of the problems we've encountered are, you know, I would say typical of startup investing in general. You know, so that's a very generic statement with respect to, you know, founders get ambitious and they get, wide-eyed. And, you know, that's part of the strategy. Again, what we're doing is to invest in a number of companies, so we diversify out that risk. And then the other thing that you see is there's kind of a big jump. There's sort of the founders and they have a certain amount of momentum. And what I see in them is, and they bootstrap for a while, typically, you know, using their own funds. They get to a point, they need a little bit of money. But when that next step, not the little bit of money, but the next step after that is a big step, oftentimes. So if they wanted to go from 5 employees to, let's say, 20, you know, that's a big step, And they got to get their sort of act and together. And that, you know, that's where we typically see the failures come in, is in that next step. So, you know, we encourage, again, the long term, stick with it. But people sometimes, you know, don't. And they kind of lose it. So, you know, that's the biggest thing. That's the biggest risk we have. That's the biggest thing that we see in real life. And it's hard. You know, you talk to entrepreneurs and founders all the time. It's hard. I mean, it's hard work. And you got to be sort of, you know, in there fighting and passionate about what you're doing. And, so we've seen that. We've seen our share of, of failures. You know, I don't know how to put it.
That just sounds like entrepreneurship, man.
Yes, you gotta,
it's
not for the faint of heart. And the OZ doesn't help you on that, honestly. That's a different beast. But it is somewhat comforting that you've got, at least the way we think about it, you've got a partner that you can. At least your partner's going to try to help, because they're invested. They have a vested interest in what they're doing with you. They want you to succeed, and they can be a source for you through those trying times. So
no, that's definitely what happened with our situation. You know, I mean, someone had to pay for getting the building customized and built out and whatever. And I mean, we were happy to, you know, to sign a lease for a while and do a lot of stuff. I don't have a whole lot of commitment past that, other than trying to be a good tenant in the neighborhood. Yeah. I may make some investments myself down the road. I don't know. I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's you know, some of that's just kind of wait and see. Just really wanting to make a difference. So once again with me today is Leonard Mills. Leonard's the CEO of the Verte Opportunity Fund. You can go to verteoz.com. There's a link in the show notes that'll help you get there faster. While we're at it, you can get matched with commercial multifamily loan options in minutes when you go to multifamilydebt.com. It's an industry-leading solution that simplifies the commercial real estate mortgage process. Visit multifamilydebt.com to learn more. That is a lending standard company. Go check out lendingstandard.com. This has been part of a bigger, broader series related to real estate investment. We've covered all kinds of topics. Today, we've been talking about opportunity zone investment. We've talked about construction entrepreneurship, talked about Airbnb. We've covered it all. And that's, I feel good because we'd gotten several hundred episodes into this show and hadn't really, there's so many types of opportunity, like not, there's so many types of entrepreneurship and so many different opportunities that you can get into. You know, like you mentioned, I mean, all of it comes with some assumed risk. I think that my wife at one point asked me what I compared my job to at something, like compare it to something else. I said, riverboat gambler. You know, I just kind of like blurted that out because I kind of feel that way on some days. You got to, you know, some of it, you just
kind of, that's actually a great
deal. It's a good bet or it's not. Yeah.
It's in opportunity zones where it's still very early and it's like the Wild West. I mean, it's like people are doing, I've seen Bitcoin stuff. I've seen all kind, you know, solar stuff. I'm not talking about real, there's tons of real estate. But you see all kinds of really interesting projects. So it's really wide open. And one thing that's maybe encouraging to folks, you may be, if you're a particular business, you may be the first opportunity zone business in that particular in that particular niche. The first OZ riverboat, to pick up on that analogy, I don't know. As long as it docks, you know, at a place in an opportunity zone, it's probably eligible. There's no real, you know, it's whatever you want to do is almost there. So
I love stuff like this as an entrepreneur. You know, I'm born and raised in Kansas City and I did a quick lap around the country and ended up starting my first large scale entrepreneurial venture in Indiana. And I ended up moving back to Kansas because of some insane tax incentives. Yeah. That occurred here that were created to attract businesses to the state. They worked. And, you know, there's all kinds of interesting stuff out there. I think too many people don't take the time to look for it, whether it's an opportunity zone fund or an R&D tax credit. There's all kinds. I mean, there are just all kinds of incentives for all kinds of stuff. Like you might actually have people already working for you at your company that qualify you for a number of different things. And because you haven't looked into it, you might not even know about it. I mean, and trust me, there are a ton of them. They are out there. You just got to kind of get out there and poke around and see what fits and what doesn't. I guarantee you, if you haven't done that, you're leaving money on the table somewhere. Yeah. So Leonard, I like to do a quick founder's freestyle on the way out of my episodes, to say my episodes, because I want you to tune in on Tuesdays. Listen to Andrew Morgan's. We're going to talk all about e-commerce and Amazon. You know, I say tune in on Tuesdays. We're switching our days of the week around soon. So I'm probably wrong. I'm usually the least informed person here as the founder of Startup Hustle and Full Scale, but that's okay. And then make sure you tune in weekly with Lauren Conaway, the founder of Innovate Her, where she tackles some interesting and important topics for all of us to hear. So, and I almost forgot, we have guest hosts. You're going to hear some not so familiar voices. And by the time they become familiar, they will probably be done with their guest series. So trying to bring in some subject matter experts that are really, really good at talking about some of the things that we are not experts on. So Leonard, on the way out, like, what's the best advice you can give for someone that wants to make opportunity zone investments?
Well, there's two sides of the street. We talked a lot about the businesses. So I encourage, you know, the businesses to learn about them. Going back to your point, there's typically layers of tax incentives not just the opportunity zone. So I would not be narrow-minded with respect to the opportunity zones. That's on the business side. On the investor side, we didn't talk about that as much. The investment incentives are significant. I would encourage investors to learn about them. If anybody wants to reach out to me on that particular topic, feel free. There's lots of stuff on the internet. It looks overwhelming. I guess my biggest advice is it's not, because it's doable. People are doing it, and they're doing it in increasingly significant size. So it's still the Wild West, as I alluded to. It's anything's open, but I would really encourage both sides of the street, both the investors and the investees, the companies, that they should, keep an open mind. Don't think about it as overly bureaucratic. It's not. There are some compliance. You do have to follow the rules, but they are manageable, and it's, I think, worthwhile.
I think my advice is to be creative and then find people that are already experts. There is a lot of subject matter expertise on this out there, kind of like Leonard mentioned, the compliance points and some of that. I mean, lawyers, accountants, people that are already doing it are a good place to start. And along the way, those are the best people to often point you towards the people that you may do something with. Speaking of which, go check out what Leonard and everyone at Verte is doing. As you mentioned, there's no boundaries there. So I'm pretty sure that you want to hear from the people.
Yes.
There you go. That's the perfect way to end the show, Leonard. I'll see you next time. Reach out to Leonard for those of you listening. See you down the road.
Thank you so much.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.